I know who your father is, if you recall, Magnus. You and I used to be quite close.
Magnus did recall.
I don't see what that has to do with Alec.
Have you told him about your father?
She demanded.
After a long pause, Magnus said, No.
Hypatia relaxed slightly.
Good. I hope you're not thinking of doing so.
I don't see that it's any of your business what I tell my boyfriend.
I'm sure you regard Alec Lightwood as being of the highest moral caliber, Magnus,
Hypatia said, choosing her words with care.
And you might not be wrong. But imagine the position you would be putting him in if he knew that the Council's warlock representative is also the son of the demon worshipped by the Crimson Hand, a cult that is wreaking havoc right now.
If he truly cares for you, he'd conceal that knowledge, and if it ever got out,
both of you would be implicated by your shared secrecy.
History has shown that the Nephilim are capable of cruelty to their own as well as to downworlders, especially those among them who do not fall into the status quo.
We all have demon parents, Hypatia.
It isn't like that's a surprise, Magnus said.
You know as well as I do that not all demons are created equal. Not all of them would be regarded with the same hate and fear your father is. But since you bring it up, this does impact all of us. Warlocks have walked a fine line with the Nephilim for centuries. We are tolerated because our talents are useful. Many of us have professional relationships with the Clave. You're one of the most famous warlocks in the world, and like it or not, the way you are perceived reflects upon all of us. Please don't do anything that could jeopardize the safety we've fought for. You know it has been hard won.
Magnus wanted to be angry.
He wanted to tell Hypatia to stay out of his business, his love life.
But he could tell she was speaking earnestly. The edge to her voice was real. She was afraid. He cleared his throat.
I'll take it under advisement.
Hypatia, since you seem to be so well informed, do you know someone called Mori Shu?
I do,
said Hypatia, sitting back in her chair. She seemed a bit embarrassed by the passion of her outburst.
Isn't he part of your cult?
It's not my cult, Magnus said doggedly.
He's here tonight, Hypatia said. I saw him earlier. Maybe you two should have a chat, get all this cult business cleared up.
Well, maybe we will.
If you'll take my advice, said Hypatia, I'd get the Shadow Hunter business cleared up, too.
Magnus gave her a ferociously bright smile.
Unasked for advice is criticism, my dear.
Well, your funeral, said Hypatia. Wait.
Do the Nephilim give you a funeral after they execute you?
Nice seeing you, Hypatia, said Magnus, and left. He felt in need of a drink.
He wended his way through the crowd until he found a bar. He took a seat at it and ordered a dark and stormy to match his mood. Katerina's worry and Hypatia's horror had left a dent in his usually hopeful heart. The bar was set up against a window. Through the bottles, Magnus could see another dance party in full swing in the courtyard below and hear faint music filtering out from the glowing green bubble that surrounded the dancers. He had pictured dancing with Alec in beautiful places around Europe, but they weren't, because of something from Magnus's past. Magnus snapped his fingers, and a crystal glass fell into his hand, filling with amber liquid as the bottle on the shelf began to drain.
Hello there, said Xin Yun, wandering up to him with a glass of red wine in hand.
Magnus touched glasses with her.
Any luck?
No, I've tried some detection spells, but they've been unclear.
I've had the same problem, he said.
Magnus sipped his drink and studied Xin Yun's immobile face.
The cult is personal to you, he continued. It was not a question. You talk about demon hunting, but you won't talk about the cult. They didn't just kill people you loved. You feel guilty about something connected to the Crimson Hand. What is it?
They both looked out onto the courtyard full of dancers. Several moments passed.
Can you keep a secret?
Xin Yun asked.
It depends on the secret, said Magnus.
I will trust you with this one. You can do with it whatever you please.
She turned to face him.
I used to be a part of it. The Crimson Hand is mostly a human cult, but they recruit warlock children.
Xinyan's voice turned wry.
There was a time when I used to worship you.
A great poison. Holy founder and prophet of the Crimson Hand. The worshippers of Asmodeus.
Asmodeus? Magnus repeated softly, as any hope he'd had that Johnny Rook had been wrong trickled away like blood from a wound. He remembered, hundreds of years ago, wanting to find out who his father was. That was how he found out that you could use fairy blood to summon a greater demon. Magnus hadn't harmed a downworlder to call his father to him. He'd found another way. He'd looked his father in the face and spoken to him, then turned away, sick at heart.
Nobody ever tried to summon Asmodeus in those days, of course, said Xinyan. That's a new wrinkle. But we talked about him all the time. Every orphaned warlock child was his child, the court said. I thought of myself as his daughter. Everything I did was in his service.
Warlock children. He remembered how he had felt as a warlock child, desperate and alone. Anyone could have taken advantage of his desperation. He felt overwhelmed by horror. He had heard the name of the Crimson Hand over the years. They were a joke, as he had said to Tessa, and Tessa had agreed. Was it only their new leader who was a problem? Or had they been a problem for much longer than anyone realized and somehow kept their true nature quiet?
You worshipped me? Magnus asked, and could not suppress the despairing edge to his voice.
I'm glad you've been cured of that nonsense. How long were you in this cult?
Many decades, she said bitterly. A lifetime's worth. I used to kill for them. I thought I was killing for you, in your name. She paused. Please don't tell the Shadow Hunter, Eric, that I killed for them. You can tell him I was in the cult, if you must.
No, Magnus whispered.
But he didn't know if he was saying it for Xinyan's sake or for his own. Xinyan said she'd thought of herself as Asmodeus's child. He could only imagine her horror if she knew Magnus actually was Asmodeus's child. He thought of Hypatia, her warning that he must not reveal his father's identity to Alec.
Imagine the position you would be putting him in. History has shown that the Nephilim are capable of cruelty to their own as well as to downworlders. It has been many more lifetimes since I broke free from their clutches. I have been trying to bring them down ever since, but I wasn't strong enough to do it on my own. And then this mysterious new leader came. I didn't have anyone to turn to. I felt so helpless.
How did you happen to join them?
Xinyan bowed her head.
I was already told you more than I ever intended to.
Magnus didn't press further. He didn't talk about his childhood either.
You are brave to come back and face your past, he said quietly. I'd say face your demons, but that seems too on the nose.
Xinyan snorted.
I don't suppose you know where the Crimson Hand's chamber is?
Xinyan was already shaking her head as Magnus added, without much hope.
Or these red scrolls of magic?
Mori would know, Xinyan told him. The members of the Crimson Hand trusted him more than me. We used to be close, but I had to leave him behind when I fled. It has been years, but I would know him if I saw him, and he would trust me.
He's here, said Magnus, supposedly.
Magnus clicked his fingers, and his glass disappeared in a crystal bright wink. Then he reached for a bottle of champagne from a nearby chiller. This was an impressive party, but Magnus was having a terrible time. He had turned up no secret lairs and found no sign of this annoying mystery man. He wanted to dance, and he wanted to forget that there was so much he didn't remember.
I will ask around about him, said Xinyan.
You do that, Magnus said, rising from the bar.
I have someone to attend to. He loved Alec. and he wanted to lay his past and his truths in front of Alec like bolts of shining silk at his feet. He wanted to tell Alec who his father was, and hope it would not matter. But how could he confess to Alec what he didn't remember? And how could he tell Alec secrets that had the potential to make him a target of the Clave, like Hypatia had said? He trusted Alec. He trusted him implicitly. But trust did not guarantee Alec's safety. Besides, Magnus had trusted and been wrong before. As he headed out in search of Alec, he could not silence the echo of his old friend's voice in his ears. But does he love you? Chapter 13. Dance Me to Your Beauty. Alec watched as Magnus's friend Katarina Loss led him away. A moment later, Xin Yun exited through the large double doors, presumably to check the estate grounds, leaving Alec standing alone in the midst of a ball. Alec was very glad he was wearing a mask. He felt abandoned in hostile territory. Actually, he would much rather have been abandoned in hostile territory than left to stand around at a party. Magnus had said some of these people were his friends. During their adventures in New York, Magnus had always seemed so independent and self-sufficient. Alec was the one with the ties to his fellow shadow hunters, and above all, to his sister and his parabatai. It had never occurred to Alec that Magnus had multiple loyalties as well. Magnus was not getting invited to parties, was being cut out of his own world because he was with Alec. If Alec wanted to be with Magnus, he had to be able to get along with Magnus's friends. Magnus always made the effort to help out Alec's friends. Alec had to find some way to do this, though he could not imagine how. He remembered with deep relief that he had a mission. He twisted his way through the crowded hallways into what must be the servants' quarters, which were only slightly less crowded than the main rooms. Here, a small army of staff, mostly djinns, kelpies, and sprites, flitted about, making sure the music and light stayed on, the alcohol remained flowing, and the mansion was kept clean. There was a sitting room for a dozen or so warlocks, who were constantly rotating shifts to maintain the magic. An entire pack of werewolves handled security. He made one quick pass down the servants' hall behind the dining room and entered the kitchen, only to get thrown out by the head chef, a very angry goblin. He left the kitchen hastily. The goblin, waving a cleaver and a spatula, could not keep up. There was no sign anywhere of a stone goat. Alec tried to find his way back to the party where he could ask if anyone had seen this Morishu guy, though the idea of interrupting strangers to interrogate them wasn't the most attractive. He heard faint music coming from behind one door. He opened the door and walked into a room painted with murals of forest scenes, feathery vines, and deep pools. Against the mural, two women were making out. One woman was tiny and wearing bright purple that shone in the romantic gloom. The taller one, a woman with long, silvery blonde hair pulled back from the curve of her fairy ears, raised her eyebrow at Alec over her companion's shoulder. Her companion giggled and slid her hand up the blonde fairy woman's black-clad thigh. Alec walked backward out of the room. He closed the door. He wondered where Magnus was. He wandered through the mansion. The next room he passed contained a group of downworlders playing cards. He poked his head in and realized what sort of game it was when someone said something about fish, and then a brownie wearing a bird mask who had apparently lost the hand stood up and began to unbutton his shirt. "Oh, wow, excuse me," said Alec, fleeing. A pixie grabbed his hand.
"You can stay, Shadow Hunter. Show us some of your runes."
"Let go, please," said Alec. Her eyes sparkled mischievously at him. "I asked politely," said Alec. "I won't again." She let go. Alec continued his weary quest for Morishu, any signs of cult activity, or at the very least, someone who wouldn't make a pass at him. In one hallway, the floor gleaming parquet and the ceiling festooned with golden cherubs, there was a boy in a grumpy cat mask and biker boots, not involved in any sexual activity, legs crossed and leaning against the wall. As a bevy of fairies passed the boy, giggling and groping, the boy scooted away. Alec remembered being younger, and how overwhelming large groups of people it seemed. He came over and leaned against the wall beside the boy. He saw the boy texting.
Parties were invented to annoy me. They feature my least favorite thing, people. All intent on my least favorite activity, social interaction.
I don't really like parties either, Alex said sympathetically.
No hablo italiano,
the boy mumbled without looking up. Said Alec. This conversation is happening in English.
No hablo inglés,
he said without missing a beat. Oh, come on, really?
Worth the shot,
said the boy. Alec considered going away. The boy wrote another text to a contact he had saved as RF. Alec could not help but notice that the conversation was entirely one-sided, the boy sending text after text with no response. The last text read,
Venice smells like a toilet. As a New Yorker, I do not say this lightly.
The weird coincidence emboldened Alec to try again. I get shy when there are strangers, too, Alec told the kid.
I'm not shy, the boy sneered. I used to hit everyone around me and everything that is happening.
Well, Alec shrugged, those feel like similar things sometimes. The boy lifted his curly head, pushing the grumpy cat mask off his face, and froze. Alec froze, too, at the twin shock of fangs and familiarity. This was a vampire, and Alec knew him. Raphael? He asked. Raphael Santiago? He wondered what the second-in-command of the New York clan was doing here. Downworlders might be flooding in from all over the world, but Raphael had never struck Alec as a party animal. Of course, he was not exactly coming off as a party animal now.
Oh, no, it's you, said Raphael. The 12-year-old idiot.
Alec was not keen on vampires. They were, after all, people who had died. Alec had seen too much death to want reminders of it. He understood that they were immortal, but there was no need to show off about it. We just fought a war together. I was with you in the graveyard when Simon came back as a vampire. You've seen me multiple times since I was 12.
The thought of you at 12 haunts me, Raphael said darkly.
Okay, Alec said, humoring him. So have you seen a guy called Mori Shu anywhere around here?
I am trying not to make eye contact with anyone here, said Raphael. And I'm not a snitch for shadow hunters, or a fan of talking to people of any kind in any place.
Alec rolled his eyes. At this point, a fairy woman came twirling through. She had leaves in her updo and was swathed in ribbons and ivy and not much else. She tripped on a trailing line of ivy and Alec caught her.
Good reflexes, she said brightly. Also great arms, would you? Be interested in a night of tumultuous, forbidden passion with an option to extend to 7 years?
I am gay, Alec said. He was not used to saying that casually to any random person. It was strange to say it and feel both relief and a shadow of his old fear twined together. Of course, the declaration might not mean much to fairies. The fairy woman accepted it with a shrug, then looked over at Raphael and lit up. Something about the leather jacket or the scowl seemed to appeal to her strongly.
How about you, vampire without a cause?
I'm not gay, said Raphael. I'm not straight. I'm not interested.
Your sexuality is not interested? Alec asked curiously. Raphael said,
That's right.
The fairy thought for a moment, then ventured,
I can also assume the appearance of a tree.
I didn't say not interested unless you're a tree.
Wait, said the fairy suddenly. I recognize you. You're Raphael Santiago. I've heard of you.
Raphael made a gesture of dismissal.
Have you heard I like it when people go away?
You were one of the heroes in the Downworlder victory over Valentine. He was one of the heroes of the Downworlder and Shadow Hunter Alliance, which led to the victory, Alec said. Raphael stopped looking annoyed and began to look nastily amused.
Oh, did the Shadow Hunters help a little?
He asked.
You were there,
said Alec.
Can I have your autograph, Raphael?
Asked the fairy lady. She produced a large, shiny green leaf and a quill. Raphael wrote, "Leave me alone," on the leaf.
I'll cherish it,
said the fairy. She ran away, clutching the leaf to her bosom.
Don't,
Raphael yelled after her. A blast of music echoing down the corridors was his only reply. Alec and Raphael both winced. Raphael glanced up at him.
This is the worst party I have ever been to, he said, and I hate parties. People keep asking me whether I have extra superpowers, and I tell them they are thinking of Simon, whom I dislike.
That's a little harsh, said Alec.
You have to be harsh with fledglings or they do not learn, said Raphael sternly. Besides, his jokes are stupid.
They're not all gold, Alec admitted.
How do you know him? Raphael snapped his fingers. Wait, I remember. He's friends with your annoying blonde pyramidai, right?
He was, though Simon would probably be surprised to hear it. Alec was very familiar with how Jace behaved when he wanted to be your friend. He didn't act friendly, which would have been too easy. Instead, he just spent a lot of time in your presence until you got used to him being there, which he was clearly now doing with regard to Simon. When Jace and Alec were little, Jace had done a lot of hostile hanging around him, hoping to be noticed and loved. Alec honestly preferred it to awkward getting-to-know-you conversations.
Right. Plus, Simon is sort of dating my sister, Isabel, said Alec.
That can't be, said Raphael. Isabel can do better.
Do you know my sister? Alec asked.
She threatened me with the candelabra once, but we don't really chat, said Raphael. Which means we have my ideal relationship. He gave Alec a cold glare. It's the relationship I wish I had with all Shadowhunters.
Alec was about to give up and walk away, when a pretty vampire woman in a Chong Sam came flying down the hallway, ribbons waving from her purple-streaked hair like a silken flag. Her face was familiar. Alec had seen her at Taki's, and around the city more generally, usually with Raphael.
Save us, O fearless leader, said Raphael's lady friend. Elliot's in a huge aquarium, puking blue and green. He tried to drink mermaid blood. He tried to drink selkie blood. He tried to...
Ahem,
said Raphael, with a savage jerk of his head in Alec's direction. Alec waved.
Shadowhunter, he said, right here. Hi.
He tried to keep to the accords and obey all the known laws, the woman declared, because that's the New York clan's idea of a truly festive good time.
Alec remembered Magnus and tried not to look like he was here to ruin the Downworlder party. There was one thing he and this woman had in common. He recognized the bright purple she was wearing.
I think I saw you earlier, said Alec hesitantly. You were making out with the fairy girl?
Yeah, you're going to have to be more specific than that, said the vampire woman. This is a party. I've made out with 6 fairy girls, 4 fairy boys, and a talking toadstool whose gender I'm unsure about. Pretty sexy for a toadstool, though.
Raphael covered his face briefly with his non-texting hand.
Why? You want to make something of it? The woman bristled. How happy I am to see the Nephilim constantly crashing our parties. Were you even invited?
I'm a +1, said Alec.
The vampire girl relaxed slightly.
Oh, right. You're Magnus's latest disaster, she said. That's what Raphael calls you. I'm Lily.
She lifted a hand in a half-hearted wave. Alec glanced at Raphael, who arched his eyebrow at Alec in an unfriendly way. Didn't realize Raphael and I were on pet name terms, said Alec. He continued to study Raphael. Do you know Magnus well?
Hardly at all, said Raphael. Barely acquainted. I don't think much of his personality, or his dress sense, or the company he keeps. Come away, Lily. Alexander, I hope I never see you again.
I've decided I detest you, Lily told Alec.
It's mutual, Alec said dryly.
Unexpectedly, that made the vampire woman smile before Raphael dragged her away. Alec was almost sorry to see them go. They were a piece of New York, even if they were vampires, and for some reason incredibly hostile toward him in particular. Alec had never met anyone worse at parties than he was before. He could not give up his search yet. He made his way downward, searching for the basement, and found a bowling alley that had been turned into an impromptu dueling venue. Next to it was a theater that he could only describe as a Roman toga orgy room. At the far end was a swimming pool that had been changed into a massive bubble bath party. It was all very overwhelming and uncomfortable. There were still no stone goats in sight. He entered a side door and found himself alone in a lighted passageway leading to what looked like a cellar. The noise from the party was dampened by the thick stone walls. Alec proceeded down the corridor and descended a set of stairs, noting the thick layer of dust on just about everything that conveniently betrayed footprints on the steps. Someone had been here recently. The lower level opened to a roughly cut stone cellar filled with racks of wooden barrels on one side and stacks of food stores on the other. This place would make the perfect entrance to a secret lair if there ever were one. He began to probe the caskets, checking for a false bottom or a hidden latch or anything out of the ordinary. He was halfway along the wall when he heard it, distant voices and the sound of scraping. Alec went still. He cocked his head to the side and listened with his rune-enhanced hearing. "These used to be the Crimson Ant's headquarters," said a man's French-accented voice. "But I've seen no sign of cult activity, and every sign of a seriously amazing party. I even heard Magnus Bane was here."
"And yet, we still have to search the whole building," said a woman in return. "Imagine that."
Alec drew a seraph blade as he crept toward the voices, though he didn't activate it. At the end of the wall, a short hallway extended that opened to a wine cellar. On the walls were floor-to-ceiling shelves filled with bottles. There was a blinding white light emanating from a point on one of the shelves, illuminating the room. Standing in front of it were two silhouettes studying what appeared to be a small statue of Bacchus. Alec could make out a woman's side profile and the curve of one fairy ear. He couldn't get a good view of their faces in the harsh light, so he continued creeping forward, one soft step at a time. No downworlder could hear a shadow hunter coming, if the shadow hunter didn't want them to. A dagger flew through the air, just missing the sleeve of Alec's black coat. Maybe some downworlders could hear a shadow hunter coming. "Athede!" the woman shouted, and her seraph blade caught fire in her hand. The man beside her drew his bow.
"Wait," said Alec, and pulled his silk mask down with his free hand. "I'm a shadow hunter. I'm Alec Lightwood. I'm from the New York Institute."
"Oh," said the man, and lowered his bow. "Hi there."
The shadow hunter woman, who had drawn first, did not put her seraph blade away, but stepped closer, studying him. Alec studied her in turn, and recognized her, pale as a pearl, with streaming fair hair, delicately pointed ears, and striking blue-green eyes. Her pretty face was set in grim lines now. She was the fairy woman who had been kissing the vampire girl in the first room Alec had stumbled into at this ball. She was the shadow hunter woman Alec had seen from the vantage of a hot air balloon, chasing a demon in Paris. There was only one shadow hunter woman with fairy heritage Alec knew of.
"And you're Helen Blackthorn," he said slowly, "from Los Angeles. What are you doing here?"
"I'm on my travel year," said Helen. "I was in the Paris Institute, intending to go to the Institute in Rome, when we heard rumors about a warlock commanding demons and leading a cult called the Crimson Hand."
"What rumors?" asked Alec. "What have you heard, and where from?"
Helen ignored the questions. "I've been chasing the demons and the warlock ever since. Malcolm Fade, High Warlock of Los Angeles, gave me an invitation to this party, and I came hoping to find answers."
"What are you doing here?"
Alec blinked. I'm on vacation."
He realized how stupid that sounded. It was as close to the truth as he could admit, though, without exposing Magnus and leading to a situation where he was standing in front of the glaive, explaining, "My warlock boyfriend accidentally founded a demon cult."
When Alec was in trouble, he was used to being able to turn to his fellow shadow hunters for help. If it hadn't been for Magnus, he would have told these two about Mori Shu and the stone goat. They could all have gone searching together. But Alec couldn't do that now. These shadow hunters and he might not be on the same side. He looked at the shadow hunters, and instead of relief that they were here, he felt only anxiety about the lies he had to tell them. "I'm just here to have a good time," Alec added weakly. Disbelief flashed across Helen's face.
"In the sub-basement of a former cult headquarters, during a downworlder party full of miscreants armed with the Seraph Blade."
"That isn't your idea of a good time?" Alec asked.
"I've heard of you," said Helen. "You were in the war. You were the one with Magnus Bane."
"He's my boyfriend," Alec said flatly. He deliberately did not look at the face of the Shadowhunter man, who had hung back silently. Given what Alec had seen earlier, Helen might be okay with same-sex relationships, but Shadowhunters often were not. She didn't look shocked, though. She looked worried.
"Malcolm Fade told me there's a rumor Magnus Bane is the warlock leading the Crimson Hand," said Helen.
So now Shadowhunters had heard the rumor. Alec told himself to be calm. Malcolm was the high warlock of Los Angeles. Helen lived in the Los Angeles Institute. They knew each other. That didn't mean the story had spread to the rest of the clave.
"It's not true," said Alec, with all the conviction he could muster. "Malcolm did say he didn't believe it," Helen admitted.
"Right," Alec said.
"I can see you've got the situation handled. I'll just head back upstairs to the party."
Helen casually walked past him to look up the steps to see if anyone else was there. It wasn't lost on Alec that she still held the Seraph Blade in her hand, nor that she had just cut off his escape route. She turned to him and said,
"I think you should come with us to the Rome Institute to answer some questions."
Alec kept his face neutral, but a chill swept through his body. If it came to it, the Clave could put the mortal sword in his hands, and he would be forced to tell the truth. He'd have to say that Magnus thought he had bounded the cult.
"I think we're blowing this way out of proportion," he said.
"I agree," said the Shadowhunter man unexpectedly, and caught Alec's attention for the first time.
He was short and good-looking, with a dramatic sweep of dark red hair and a French accent.
"Excuse me, Monsieur Lightwood. Have you been in Paris lately?"
"Yes, right before I arrived in Venice."
"And were you by chance on a hot air balloon?"
He almost said no, but realized he was caught.
"Yeah, I was."
"I knew it!"
The shadow hunter rushed forward and grabbed his hand, pumping it enthusiastically.
"I want to thank you, Monsieur Lightwood. Can I call you Alec? I am Léon Verlac of the Paris Institute, the Ravissant Elan, and I were the shadow hunters you aided on the rooftop. We cannot thank you enough."
Helen's expression suggested that she could probably thank Alec enough, or possibly not thank him at all. Alec withdrew his hand from Leon's with difficulty. Leon seemed inclined to hang on to it.
"So you were in Paris as well," Helen said casually. "What an astonishing coincidence."
"Visiting Paris on a European vacation is a coincidence," said Alec.
"It would be a crime not to visit Paris," Leon agreed. "You should have stopped by the Paris Institute while you were there, Alec. I would have shown you the sights as I did for our charming Alain, who I would follow anywhere, even to this terrible party."
Alec glanced between Helen and Leon, trying to work out if they were together. Helen had been kissing that vampire woman, so he assumed not, but he was naive about these things. Perhaps they would have a couple squabble and let him go.
"Go fetch the car, Leon," said Helen. "You can ask Alec anything you like on the ride down to Rome."
"Now, hold on," said Leon. "Alec saved our lives on the rooftop. He wouldn't do that if he had a hand in this. I, for one, believe him. He was just investigating suspicious activity in the basement, specifically us, like any shadow hunter would, even though he is on vacation."
He gave Alec an appreciative nod.
"It was no problem," said Alec carefully.
"Besides, look at him," said Leon. He is clearly here to party. He looks fantastic. I told you we should have masks. Let the poor man get back to his vacation, Elan, while we find some real leads.
Helen regarded Alec for another long moment, then slowly lowered her seraph blade.
All right, she said grudgingly.
Alec did not ask them about Mori's shoe or anything else. He headed for the stairs without delay.
Wait, said Helen.
Alec turned around, trying to conceal his dread.
What?
Thanks, said Helen. For the rescue in Paris. That surprised a smile from Alec.
You're welcome.
Helen smiled back. She was pretty when she smiled.
Still, Alec felt shaken as he reached the upper floors, wading upstream against the throng of partygoers heading to the dance floor.
He wondered if the cold apprehension he'd felt talking to Helen was how Downworlders always felt when they were being questioned by Shadowhunters. Not that he blamed Helen for being suspicious. Alec would be too, in her shoes. Alec knew too well that anyone could be a traitor, like his tutor, Hodge Starkweather, who had betrayed them to Ballantyne during the Mortal War. Helen's suspicions were warranted. After all, he had lied, or at least omitted important information. Lying to fellow Shadowhunters, who should have been on his side, felt awful. He felt like a traitor. But he'd feel worse if he failed to protect Magnus. The Clave should be set up to protect people like Magnus, not pose another threat to him. Alec had always believed in the law, but if the law didn't shield Magnus, the law should be changed. Alec trusted maybe 6 people in the world without question, but one of them was Magnus. He just hadn't expected trusting someone to be so complicated. If only he could find Magnus. He wouldn't have thought it was possible, but the mansion was busier now than when they had arrived just a short time ago. Alec kept heading upstairs until he came to a long stone balcony running along the walls of the grand ballroom. It was a useful vantage point from which to oversee the whole party. He only had to walk the perimeter once before he caught sight of Magnus dancing in the crowd of Downworlders and mundanes below. The sight of him made Alec's whole body relax. Before he met Magnus, Alec was not sure he'd ever really believed he could be entirely himself and entirely happy. Then there was Magnus, and what had seemed impossible became possible. Seeing him was always a small shock. His face, a glimpse of hope that everything might be all right. 2 of the ballroom walls were lined with enormous arches open to the night, making the room a golden orb rising between black waters and black sky. The ballroom floor was a wide expanse of blue, the blue of a lake in summertime. The ceiling was crowded with an orchestra of stars, the chandelier a cascade of falling stars that fairies were using as a swing. As Alec watched, one fairy pushed another off the chandelier. Alec tensed, but then gauzy turquoise wings unfolded from the fairy's back, and he landed safely among the dancers. There were winged fairies flying, werewolves tumbling like acrobats through the crowd, vampires' fangs glittering as they laughed, and warlocks wrapped in light. Masks were lifted and dropped, torches trailed fire like burning ribbons, and the silver shadows of moonlit water danced on the walls. Alec had seen beauty before, in the shining towers of Alicante, in the fluid fighting of his sister and his parabatai, in many familiar beloved things. He had not seen beauty in Downworld until Magnus. Yet here it was, simply waiting to be found. Alec began to feel bad about his indignation that Downworlders were claiming the victory against Ballantyne as their own. He knew what had happened. He had been there, fighting side by side with Downworlders, and the war had made this golden freedom possible. This was their victory as much as his. Alec remembered he and Magnus lending each other strength through the Alliance rune, magic only reinforcing the connection between them, and thought, this victory is ours. He and Magnus would work through this puzzle too. They would find someone to help them in this maze of gold columns and dark rivers.
They had overcome worse.
Alec's heart lifted at the thought, and in that moment, he saw his warlock in the crowd. Magnus's head was tipped back, his shimmering white suit rumpled like bedsheets in the morning, his white cloak swaying after him like a moonbeam. His mirror-like mask was askew, his black hair wild, his slim body arching with the dance, and wrapped around his fingers like 10 shimmering rings was the light of his magic, casting a spotlight on one dancer, then another. The fairy Hyacinth caught one radiant stream of magic and whirled, holding onto it as if the light were a ribbon on a maypole. The vampire woman in the violet Chiang Sam, Lily, was dancing with another vampire who Alec presumed was Elliot, given the blue and green stains around his mouth and all down his shirt front. Malcolm Fade joined in the dance with Hyacinth, though he appeared to be doing a jig and she seemed very puzzled. The blue warlock, who Magnus had called Katerina, was waltzing with a tall, horned fairy. The dark-skinned fairy, whom Magnus had addressed as a prince, was surrounded by others whom Alec presumed were courtiers, dancing in a circle around him. Magnus laughed as he saw Hyacinth using his magic like a ribbon and sent shimmering streamers of blue light in several directions. Katerina batted away Magnus's magic, her own hand glowing faintly white. The two vampires, Lily and Elliot, both let a magic ribbon wrap around one of their wrists. They did not seem like trusting types, but they instantly leaned into Magnus with perfect faith, Lily pretending to be a captive, and Elliot shimmying enthusiastically as Magnus laughed and pulled them toward him in the dance. Music and starshine filled the room, and Magnus shone brightest in all that bright company. As Alec made for the stairs, he brushed past Rafael Santiago, who was leaning against the balcony rail and looking down at the dancing crowd, his dark eyes lingering on Lily and Elliot and Magnus. There was a tiny smile on the vampire's face. When Raphael noticed Alec, the scowl snapped immediately back on.
"I find such wanton expressions of joy disgusting," he declaimed.
"If you say so," said Alec. "I like it myself." He reached the foot of the stairs and was crossing the gleaming ballroom floor when a voice boomed out from above.
"This is DJ Bat, greatest werewolf DJ in the world, or at least in the top five, coming to you live from Venice, because warlocks make irresponsible financial decisions, and this one is for the lovers, or people with friends who will dance with them. Some of us are lonely jerks, and we'll be doing shots at the bar."
A slow, sweet song with a shivery beat began. Alec would not have thought the dance floor could become more crowded, but it happened. Dozens of masked downworlders in formal wear who had been standing near the walls converged on the floor. Alec found himself standing awkwardly alone in the center of the room as couples twirled around him. Crowns of thorns and towering multicolored feathers blocked his vision. He looked around in alarm for an escape route.
"May I have this dance, sir?"
Instead, he saw Magnus, all in white and silver.
"I was coming to find you," said Alec.
"I saw you coming."
Magnus pushed his mask halfway up his face.
"We found each other."
He moved in close to Alec. One hand settling on his lower back, laced their fingers together with the other, and kissed him. The glancing touch of his mouth was like a ray of light on water, illuminating and transforming. Alec moved instinctively closer, longing to be illuminated and transformed again, then remembered, reluctantly, that they should remain on task.
"I met a shadow hunter here called Helen Blackthorne," he murmured against Magnus's mouth. "She said..."
Magnus kissed him again. "Something fascinating, I'm sure," he said. "You haven't answered my question."
"What question?"
"May I have this dance?"
"Of course," said Alec. "I mean, I would love this dance. It's only we should work this out."
Magnus drew in a breath and nodded.
"We will.
Tell me."
He had been smiling before, but the smile had faded. Instead, there was a certain burdened set to his shoulders. Magnus felt guilty, Alec realized for the first time, for spoiling their vacation. Alec thought that was silly. He'd have had no vacation at all without Magnus,
No shine of magic and no shocks of joy. No lights and no music.
Alec reached up and touched Magnus's mask. He could see his own face reflected in it like a mirror, his eyes wide and blue against the glittering carnival around them. He almost did not recognize himself. He looked so happy. Then he pushed the mask up, and he could see Magnus's face clearly. That was better.
"Let's dance first," he said.
He wrapped his arm around Magnus's back, felt unsure about that, fumbled, and tried repositioning his hands on Magnus's shoulders. Magnus was smiling again.
"Allow me."
Alec had never given much thought to dancing before, aside from a few awkward childhood attempts with his sister or their friend Aline. Magnus slid his arm around Alec's waist and began to dance. Alec was no dancer, but he was a fighter, and he found he intuitively understood how to respond to Magnus's movements and how to move with them. They were suddenly synchronized, gliding across the floor as gracefully as any other couple in the room, and all at once Alec knew how it was to really dance with someone. A thing Alec had never even known to want. He'd always assumed that storybook moments like these were meant for Jace, Isabel, anyone but him. Yet here he was. The chandelier seemed to shine directly on them. A fairy on the balcony tossed down a handful of glittering stars. Tiny, shimmering points of light settled in Magnus's black hair and floated in the tiny space between their faces. Alec leaned forward so their foreheads touched, and their lips met again. Magnus's mouth was curved against Alec's. Their smiles fitted against each other perfectly. Alec closed his eyes, but he could still see light. Maybe his life could be amazing. Maybe it always could have, and he'd needed Magnus to open the door and let him see all the wonders he held inside himself. All the capacity for joy. Magnus's mouth slid against his. He looped his arms around Alec's neck, drawing him tighter and closer. Magnus's body moved sinuously against his, and light became heat. Magnus drew a hand down the lapel of Alec's jacket, slipping it inside and resting his palm against Alec's shirt over his frantically beating heart. Alec lifted his hand from the lean line of Magnus's waist, catching on the metal scales of Magnus's elaborate belt before he took Magnus's hand again and interlaced their fingers together, there against his chest. Alec could feel a flush creeping up the back of his neck and flooding his face, leaving him lightheaded and embarrassed and wishing for more. Every feeling was new. He kept being caught off guard by the combination of the sharp, cutting ache of desire and the tenderness, incongruous and yet impossible to untangle. He had never expected anything like this, but now that he had it, he did not know how he would ever do without it. He hoped he never had to find out.
"Alexander, do you—"
Magnus began, his murmur faint under the song and the shrieks of laughter. His voice was low and warm and the only important sound in the world.
"Yes,"
Alec whispered before Magnus could finish. All he wanted was to say yes to anything Magnus asked. His mouth clashed against Magnus's, hungry and hot, their bodies locking together. They were kissing wildly, as if starved for it, and Alec didn't care about any of the people looking. He had kissed Magnus in the Accords Hall, partly to show the world what he felt. In this moment, he didn't care about the world. He cared about what he and Magnus were making between them, the heat and the friction that made him want to die, to drop to his knees and pull Magnus down with him. Then, there was a crash of sound and a blaze of fire, as if a meteor was landing in the center of the ballroom, and both Alec and Magnus froze, tense and uncertain. A new warlock had appeared at the foot of the stairs, his eyes locked with Malcolm Bade's, and though Alec didn't recognize him, he certainly recognized the frisson of alarm and distress that rippled across the crowd. Alec used his hold on Magnus's hand to swing Magnus behind him, keeping their fingers locked. With his free hand, he drew a seraph blade and murmured an angel's name. Across the room, Bat the DJ and Raphael put their shot glasses down on the bar. Raphael began to elbow his way through the crowd toward his vampires,
Lily and Elliot were heading toward Raphael as well. Alec lifted his voice so it rang through the marble room, in the same way the light of his seraph blade blazed. "Anyone who wants a Shadow Hunter's protection," Alec shouted, "come to me!" Chapter 14. High Water. Alec had one hand in Magnus's and his other hand on the hilt of his seraph blade. Several of the party guests were cautiously creeping toward him and his offered protection. Magnus scanned the room, waiting to see who made the first move. The werewolf head of security was storming down the stairs. The warlock at the foot of the stairs made a small gesture, and the head of security flew over the crowd on the dance floor, hit the marble floor, and skidded all the way into the wall. Katarina ran to his side immediately, helping him up as he hunched over and clutched his ribs. The warlock did not look to see what had happened to the werewolf. He was a short man with a beard, snake-like eyes, and white scaled skin. He scanned the crowd as he made his way onto the floor.
"Malcolm Fade."
The look on the warlock's face was thunderous as he pointed a finger at the High Warlock of Los Angeles. A light vapor seemed to drift from the tip of his finger.
"You stole my party and my mansion."
"Hello, Barnabas," said Malcolm. "Did you lose a mansion? That's so sad. I hope you find it."
"I bought this mansion last week, the moment it went up for sale," Barnabas bellowed. "We are standing right now in the mansion you stole from me."
"Oh, hooray. Consider it found, then," Malcolm said.
Alec nudged Magnus. "Who is that?" Magnus leaned in. "Barnabas Hale. He runs the Shadow Market in Los Angeles. I believe he was a contender for High Warlock before Malcolm got it. A bit of a rivalry there."
"Oh," Alec said. "Great."
Barnabas swept a menacing finger across the room.
"I was going to be the one who celebrated our amazing downworlder victory. I purchased this venue for my Barnabas Bash. Or I might have called it my Barnabash. I hadn't decided yet. Now we'll never know."
"Well, someone has definitely had a few drinks tonight," Magnus muttered. "Barnabash? Really?"
Barnabas's rant was not over.
"You swoop in like the thief you are and undermine me, just like you stole my rightful position as High Warlock of L.A. Well, this party is canceled. You've made me look a fool."
Barnabas's hands began to hiss and smoke. The crowd melted back, giving them more space in the middle of the dance floor. More and more people were collecting behind Alec.
"You really don't need my help for that, Barnabas," Malcolm observed.
His hands began to glow, and two glasses of champagne appeared at the tips of his fingers. He sipped from one and floated the other to Barnabas.
"Relax. Enjoy the party."
"This is what I think of your party."
Barnabas flipped his hand, and the glass tumbled back toward Malcolm, spilling on Malcolm's lavender jacket. A gasp passed through the crowd, but Malcolm didn't miss a beat. He looked down at his ruined outfit, pulled out a handkerchief, and began dabbing his face with it. There was a feverish glitter in Malcolm's eyes, as if he was enjoying himself. Once, Magnus knew, Malcolm had wanted a calm, quiet life. That had been a long time ago.
"I did you a favor," Malcolm declared. "We all know your party-throwing abilities are subpar. I saved you the embarrassment of throwing a party and having nobody come."
"How dare you!"
It seemed as if vapor was rising from Barnabas's head. The warlock knelt and slammed his palm to the floor, sending a white line of jagged ice racing toward Malcolm. Alec stepped forward, as if to intervene, but Magnus gripped his elbow tightly and shook his head. Malcolm waved dismissively and melted the ice into a hiss of steam. Then the constellation Orion leaped down from the grand ballroom's ceiling and took a position next to him. The other constellations, forming vaguely human outlines, drifted down from the ceiling to join the fight on Malcolm's side. Malcolm pointed lazily at Barnabas, and Orion loosed a roar and charged the short warlock, waving his musical instrument like a club. Barnabas froze the constellation before it reached him, then shattered it into a cloud of stardust.
"That was my first cello," snapped Malcolm. "Do you know how hard they are to replace?"
The constellations flanking Malcolm
their bodies transparent with hundreds of blinking specks of stardust and veins of light, charged Barnabas. They were halfway across the floor when the giant chandelier in the middle of the room came alive and began to use its many arms like an octopus, grabbing at any of the constellations within reach. The marble floor crumbled away near Malcolm, allowing metal pipes to emerge from the dust, snaking toward Malcolm. Before they could reach him, the ceiling exploded. Most of the crowd scattered through the open arches of the room out into the night, terrified. Others, either brave or more stupid, remained frozen, unable to look away. The two warlocks flung ice, fire, lightning, and green globs of goo at each other. The mansion groaned as windows shattered, bolts of ice punched holes into walls, and jets of flame sprayed across the floor. An ice bolt struck the wall a few feet away, raining a hail of debris on a group of nymphs. Alec leaped for them, grabbing up a shard of piano and lifting it over their heads as a shield. "We should do something," he shouted to Magnus. "Or," said Magnus, "we could recognize this has nothing to do with us and get out of here. They're going to bring down the entire mansion. Someone is going to get hurt." Magnus threw his hands out, and blocks of marble ripped loose from the floor, forming a short wall shielding the nymphs from a second ice bolt. "Someone is definitely going to get hurt, very probably us." But Alec was in hero mode, and there wasn't much Magnus could do to stop him. "And yet, I'll try to mitigate the damage," he added. The room moaned and shook, and one of the walls buckled. Raphael pushed Elliot out of the way of falling masonry, then brushed white marble dust impatiently out of the other vampire's dreadlocks.
"I am not feeling well," said Elliot. "Is the building falling down, or did I drink way too much?"
"Both," said Lily.
"I am feeling fairly sick myself," Raphael contributed. "Of you being an idiot, Elliot."
"Hello, Raphael," said Magnus. "Maybe you'd like to follow Alec outside." He pointed to the place where Alec had been. He did not see Alec there. Instead, he saw the railing on the balcony break loose. It tumbled in pieces toward Katerina's oblivious head as she ministered to several injured werewolves. Magnus watched as Alec, who had retrieved his confiscated bow and arrows, now slung across his back, ran into the crossfire, swerving around two metal pipes clutching at him, barely avoiding getting his head taken off by a swipe of the chandelier octopus. He dove just in time to tackle Katerina out of the way and landed on his knees with her safe in his arms.
"Following Alec seems unwise," said Raphael from behind Magnus, "since he seems to be running directly toward danger."
"Shadow hunters always do," said Magnus. Raphael examined his fingernails.
"It might be nice," he said, "to have a partner you knew was going to choose you, not duty or saving the world."
Magnus did not respond. His attention was caught by Katerina and Alec. Katerina had been blinking up at Alec, looking mildly surprised. Suddenly, she began to struggle, crying out a warning. Alec glanced up, but it was already too late. Another chunk of the ceiling had come free. It was dangling, about to fall and crush them. It was too late to escape, and Magnus knew Katerina was always dangerously low on magic. She healed whoever came to her and never saved enough to protect herself. Magnus watched in horror as Alec flung his body over hers, bracing himself for the cave-in that would bury them both alive. Blue fire sparked. Magnus raised his hands, glowing like lamps in the shadows.
"Alexander!" he shouted. "Move aside!"
Alec looked up, surprised not to be crushed to death. He glanced across the ruin of the ballroom at Magnus, blue eyes wide. Magnus kept both hands steady, straining to keep the large chunk of concrete hovering just above their heads. Alec and Katerina scrambled to their feet, fleeing across the treacherous ballroom toward Magnus. More living pipes blocked their path, trying to wrap their metal tentacles around Alec's ankles. He dodged and jumped to avoid them. One managed to curl around his ankle, causing him to stumble. He pushed Katerina out in front, and Magnus caught her hand and pulled her to him and safety. Magnus heard Alec say, "K.L.," and saw the blaze of the Seraph blade. One slash of it cut away the tentacle at his feet. Alec reached Magnus just as Barnabas set the entire floor of the ballroom ablaze. Malcolm responded with a tidal wave of canal water crashing in from the kitchen. The water swirled around Malcolm, knocking him off his feet
and then took out Barnabas. Both warlocks were carried out of the palazzo, Malcolm whooping with delight as if he were on a water ride at an amusement.